Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Jeff Young. About 5 years ago, we got a wake-up call with two reports describing oceans in crisis. Plummeting fish populations, coastal habitat lost to sprawl, dead zones due to nutrient runoff. It was a pretty gloomy picture. Well, now the federal government's following recommendations from those reports with what could be a sea change for ocean management. The Obama administration has proposed a comprehensive oceans policy, one that pulls together plans for fishing, offshore energy, coastal protection, and shipping, jobs that are now scattered across some 20 government agencies. A task force of top marine and environmental officials is getting feedback on the plan during a listening tour along the country's coastline.
Hello? If you can all start to find a seat, we'll get started as soon as we...
Hundreds gathered for an afternoon hearing in Providence, Rhode Island. Folks in the ocean state had a lot to say about oceans management. Greg Garrett was concerned about whales.
We now let our military, with reckless abandon, kill marine mammals. And if your national policy doesn't actually stop that, then you haven't done anybody any good.
Fishing communities advocate Angela Sanfilippo said trying to work with the government often leads to frustration.
We know that if we don't have an healthy ocean, there is no fish. We worked through these years with a lot of government agencies, but it's very difficult. The Army Corps of Engineers, the Department of the Navy, the Coast Guard. It's impossible to protect the ocean when you have to deal with so many people.
Fisherman Brian Loftus worried the plan could force guys like him off the water.
There's enough for everyone if they'd manage it properly, but that's not what they're trying to do. They're trying to shrink everyone down, get rid of half the boats, and then the other ones will be owned by big corporations. The small independent guy is going to go the way of the farmer. Bye-bye.
The hearing went on into the night. Scientists asked for ecosystem-based management. Energy developers urged more offshore wind power. Ship captains argued against putting windmills in their way. What emerged here in the nation's smallest state was a microcosm of the issues and challenges for all of the country's coasts. The next day, I tagged along as task force members hit the beach with locals who explained what lessons Little Rhode Island might hold. Grover Fugate directs the state's Coastal Resource Management Council. He says the feds could learn from the planning that kept these dunes and salt ponds healthy, even amid dense population.
They're trying to understand what's called marine spatial planning, which is essentially looking at the uses that are in the waterside and how they interact and how they can be planned rationally. And that's what we've been doing in Rhode Island for 26 years. And we now have this ocean planning initiative that's reaching much further out than any programs done before, with a eye of trying to figure out where we can put renewable energy in these waters.
Like a lot of East Coast states, Rhode Island is looking to its windy coast for energy. But some offshore wind projects are mired in controversy and delay. Deepwater Wind Managing Director Jim Lennard hopes his company can avoid that.
Marine spatial planning, ocean zoning, is very important as we put industrial uses out into the ocean. We've got industrial fishing uses, and now we're going to have wind energy out there as well. There needs to be coordination and collaboration.
So from where we're standing, where out there do you think your project might happen?
The utility scale project will be a little bit to our left, about 12 to 15 miles off the coast. There will be about 100 turbines out there spread about a half mile apart. A utility scale wind park will power 125 to 150,000 homes every year.
By going farther from shore, deep water would make its turbines less visible to beach tourists. But that could put windmills in the waters that fishermen have relied on for centuries. Lobsterman Lanny Dellinger says fishermen are trying to accommodate others.
There's no alternative. I mean, the Obama administration has made it quite clear we're going to have these alternative energy projects. Now it's time to figure out how we can do both. I think it's a matter of sizing the industry so that we can have a sustainable fishery and a sustainable industry to harvest those fish.
Sizing the industry, though, that means some people aren't going to be fishing anymore.
Absolutely. You know, there's going to be winners and losers in the process. The best thing that we can do is be part of the process early on, get a seat at the table with developers and scientists, and help to mitigate those impacts.
There's a lot here for the Federal Ocean Policy Task Force members, like Jane Lubchenco, to think about.
I think it's fair to say that the ocean is becoming an increasingly crowded place. We are seeing increasing uses, but also increasing conflicts.
Lubchenco is a highly respected marine ecologist, and since March, she's been administrator of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I spoke with her about what she wants this new ocean policy to achieve.
It's pretty clear that it's high time that we take a more thoughtful look at what combination of activities can coexist in the ocean if we want to have vibrant coastal communities and coastal economies, if we want to have the range of activities that people tell us they want from oceans. We really need to have healthy, resilient ocean and coastal ecosystems.
The state of the ocean sounds so dire, and I understand you're doing good things here, but they sound very bureaucratic, reorganizing the flowchart sort of changes. Is that kind of change really going to do what we need, given how seriously bad things are with our oceans?
Both of the ocean commissions recognized that there are many problems that exist in oceans, and they are only escalating with climate change. It's sort of an overlay along with ocean acidification on top of a lot of the other challenges. Both of them, though, pointed to one of the underlying drivers of change is that there is no integration, there's no coordination, there's no mechanism for considering the health of the system as policies are being made. So part of the challenge is to take a step back and say, how can we be smarter about using oceans without using them up? And that's very different from sort of the piecemeal, sector by sector, one crisis management at a time that we have been doing over the last, pretty much forever.
Is there time to bring some of these fisheries that are plummeting back? Is there time to stop what's happening to our coral reefs, our coastlines?
I take hope from the knowledge, from my personal experience, about the resiliency that does exist in many ocean ecosystems. When they are allowed to recover, they actually can. And so I think there's actually a dual message here, one of urgency, but there's also great hope. So we believe that it is time to move ahead very aggressively in doing more recovery, but focusing not just on individual stocks of fish, but on the health of the system, because that, in fact, is, in the end, what will be important to people. Healthy oceans matter.
You can hear a longer interview with NOAA Administrator Jane Lubchenco and read a draft of the new ocean policy at our website, loe.org. The Oceans Task Force has two more public hearings this month in New Orleans and Cleveland. The final plan goes to the president in December.